Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, a report from Ann Peterman, Executive Director of the Global Justice Ecology Project. She is on the ground in Chile. The Global Justice Ecology Project team, they have been reporting for our listeners on ongoing protests in Chile. And now, the alternative environmental climate event that began in Chile on Monday, and we'll get some updates on that. That event will last 10 days and will coincide with the official UN COP25 environmental conference that was moved from Chile, where it was originally scheduled, by Chile's embattled president. And that conference, COP25, now taking place in Spain. Meanwhile, 16-year-old Greta Thunberg, who has sparked worldwide protests by junior high and high school students, she has arrived in Spain for that conference via sailboat. And on the ground in Chile, people from across the country have gathered in Santiago, Chile's capital, for the alternative activities. We will get the latest of what is happening on the ground. This, as the UN chief yet again warns of the climate crisis deep enough that the planet is close to the point of no return. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. The World Meteorological Organization says 2019 concludes a decade of exceptional global heat, retreating ice, and record sea levels driven by greenhouse gases from human activity. The WMO released its report for the International Climate Meeting in Madrid. Director Petteri Tala says average temperatures for the last 5 and 10 year periods are almost certain to be the highest on record, with concentrations of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases continuing to mount.
The carbon dioxide concentration is highest in 3 million years, and 3 million years we had 2 to 4 degrees warmer planet than today, and the sea level was between 10 and 20 meters higher than today. So these numbers are already, especially this greenhouse carbon dioxide concentration number is somewhat alarming. This 400 ppm was regarded as a critical level, and we were exceeding that level already 3 years ago.
Tala says oceans have warmed half a degree from the surface to the ocean depths, contributing to sea level rise and a boost in the melting of glaciers worldwide. Yesterday, the president of the Marshall Islands, Hilda Hines, spoke by video link to the conference. She said her island nation is in a fight to the death. Last week, 16-foot swells washed across the low-lying nation's capital.
As we speak, hundreds of people have evacuated their homes after large waves caused the ocean to inundate parts of our capital in Majuro last week. It's a fight to the death for anyone not prepared to flee. As a nation, we refuse to flee, but we also refuse to die.
Marshall Islands President Hilda Hine. The House Intelligence Committee is poised to release its impeachment report outlining evidence of President Trump's dealings with Ukraine. The committee meets this evening to vote on adopting the report before sending it to the Judiciary Committee. Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff told MSNBC that's not the end of it for his committee.
So even while Judiciary does its work, we will continue investigating. We're continuing to issue subpoenas. We're continuing to learn new information. That work goes on. But we also feel a sense of urgency. This is a president who has sought foreign intervention in U.S. elections twice now, and even in the midst of our impeachment inquiry, is again out publicly saying not only should Ukraine do this, but China should also investigate my opponent.
President Trump is in London for the NATO summit, where he accused Democrats of being unpatriotic. House Republicans on the Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and Oversight Committees issued their own 123-page minority report. It argues Democrats failed to establish that Trump committed any impeachable offenses. President Trump launched a verbal attack on his French counterpart, Emmanuel Macron, over the French leader's criticism of NATO. As prime ministers and presidents of the 29-member alliance have converged on London to mark NATO's 70th birthday, Trump told reporters Macron's comments were very, very nasty. The French president had lamented what he called the brain death of the organization, due in large part to a lack of U.S. leadership. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Trump himself described NATO as obsolete. He has since tempered that criticism. Relations between the U.S. and France are also particularly strained this week after the U.S. Trade Representative proposed introducing tariffs on $2.4 billion in French goods in retaliation for a French tax on global tech giants. Trump spoke out on that issue as well.
If anyone's going to take advantage of the American companies, it's going to be us. It's not going to be France. And so we're taxing, as you know, we're taxing their wines and everything else. And we have a very, very big tax to put on them.
The French finance minister, Bruno Le Maire, said the U.S. tariff threat is simply unacceptable, and he threatened a response. Le Maire said the French tech tax is aimed at establishing tax justice. France wants digital companies to pay their fair share of taxes in countries where they make money instead of using tax havens to avoid taxes. France is pushing for an international agreement on the issue. The United Nations says about half of Zimbabwe's population faces severe hunger amid a devastating drought and economic collapse. The World Food Program said there's a vicious cycle of skyrocketing malnutrition that's hitting women and children hardest. It plans to more than double the number of people it helps to more than 4 million, but says overall more than 7 million people are in need. A United Nations expert on the right to food has said Zimbabwe is on the brink of man-made starvation and that the number of people needing help is shocking for a country not in armed conflict.
Those were our news headlines, and now I would like to welcome our guest, Ann Peterman, Executive Director of the Global Justice Ecology Project. She's also the coordinator of the Stop GE Trees campaign and the North American focal point for the Global Forest Coalition. She has been involved in movements for forest protection and indigenous rights since 1991. And the international and national climate justice movements since 2004. Ann Peterman co-founded the Eastern North American Resource Center of the Native Forest Network way back in 1993 and the Stop GE Trees campaign in 2004. She also participated in the founding of the Durban Group for Climate Justice in 2004 and Climate Justice Now. In 2007 at the Bali UN Climate Conference. In 2008, Global Justice Ecology Project spearheaded the founding of the North American Mobilization for Climate Justice. And Peterman speaks around the world about climate justice and against socially and environmentally destructive false solutions to climate change. She also speaks about the destructive social, ecological, and climate impacts of genetically engineered trees and second-generation biofuels made from wood. And for the Sojourner Truth listeners, you generally hear her because she does our weekly Earth Minute and has been on our show several times. We work with Global Justice Ecology Project. We partner with them for our weekly Earth Watch. So, Ann Peterman, you are on the ground in Chile. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me again, Margaret.
Okay. So, Ann, are you now in the capital? I know you have moved around to different parts of Chile since you've been there. Are you in the capital now, in Santiago?
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
Our team got back to Santiago on Saturday. So, we've been here, and we're very excited to start taking part in the Cumbre de los Pueblos, the Summit of the People, or the People Summit here in Chile, which was originally intended as the alternative summit to COP25, the UN Climate COP, when it was supposed to be here in Santiago, and the organizers decided to go ahead with it, even though the COP was moved to Madrid because of all of the protests here and the human rights violations. So it's been a very inspiring event. The opening morning when they inaugurated the event featured some audio from the Zapatistas, actually, congratulating the protesters and telling the protesters here in Chile how excited they are, you know, for their struggle, and that they're so happy to see the Mapuche flags, which is the Mapuche are the indigenous people here in Chile, to see the Mapuche flags flying in Santiago in the protests. So that was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
To know that there's a connection between the Zapatistas and the Chilean protesters here.
Right. And just for our audience to catch up on that, since on the protest, since mid-October, millions of Chileans have participated in massive nationwide protests against the right-wing policies of the government of President Sebastián Piñera. Under his presidency, Chile has imposed economic policies that have worsened living conditions for the poor, cutting public programs and raising the cost of living. And his government has also been accused of violating the human rights of indigenous and environmental activists in central and southern Chile, where multinational corporations have been given free rein to privatize and extract natural resources. Now, Anne Peterman, before we talk more about the Summit of the People, it really is important for our listeners to get a sense of what you have seen, what you have witnessed since being on the ground. The last count I heard of protesters who have been killed by the police is around 27, close to 3,000 injured, close to 7,000 detained. And I also read a report that a number of protesters are getting very serious eye injuries by the police. And that seems to be somewhat of a target. So tell us where you have been and what you have witnessed. First of all, before we go into your going into the indigenous, specifically indigenous areas, you arrived in the capital, and tell us a little bit about what you witnessed about the protests happening there.
Sure. Yeah, we got in on a Thursday, and immediately, you know, dropped off our stuff and went out into the street to see what was happening. And both that night and the subsequent night, Friday, there was a huge mobilization of people in the street, taking over the main street in Santiago that leads to the Plaza Italia, which is where most of the protests happen, which has also been renamed the Plaza of the Dignity or the Plaza de la Dignidad. So, and it was amazing to see, you know, people are jubilant. They're so happy to be involved in these protests. And, you know, they have bonfires burning at the street corners to prevent traffic from moving. And they're so well prepared. The police, of course, are lobbying. The carabineros are lobbying tear gas at the protesters. They're going up and down the street with water cannons. And the protesters are completely prepared for this. Not only do they all have goggles and face masks, but when people get sprayed with the water from the water cannons, it's not just water. It has some kind of either a pepper spray or some other chemicals in it that burn the skin.
Oh my!
And
goodness.
When someone gets sprayed, immediately someone runs up and sprays them down with a squirt bottle that has the antidote in it. You know, some kind of a neutralizer in it. When a tear gas pod canister lands at the feet of the protesters, somebody will grab it and immediately put it in a container and lock and seal it up, a container of liquid, so that it stops, you know, putting out gas. So the people are amazingly prepared for this, and the police are quite brutal. It's been said that they are not allowed to shoot at protesters anymore with rubber bullets, unless it's a security concern, but that's a pretty huge loophole in that rule. And it is true that they have been specifically targeting people's faces. So they are shooting these bullets that are rubber bullets, but they have metal inside them, so they're a little bit more damaging than just plain old rubber bullets. And they shoot them shotgun style right at people's faces. So, yeah, a lot of people have lost eyes. Some people have been blinded in these protests. And the opening of the cumbre yesterday, there was actually a statement from two people who had been blinded by the police, saying that they would not, this was not deterring them, that they were still going to be part of the protest. And that's really the sensation and the feeling that you get here, is that people are going to be a part of this no matter what, and they want the change. They want a new constitution. They want to get rid of the Pinochet-era rules and neoliberalist economic policies that have driven the country, you know, driven people down and down and down throughout the country.
Yeah, and Ann Peterman, I mean, I think a lot of, at least in the mainstream media, people were really surprised and shocked when these protests broke out in Chile. And Chile, having been seen, well, everything's going pretty, you know, pretty smoothly there. And quote unquote, democracy was returned. There was a brutal Pinochet era that a number of people, of course, still remember. You made reference to it. But given the context of what is going on in the Americas right now, in Latin America, but also the Caribbean, where we do see people uprising in Haiti and also in other parts of the world, how significant is it that these protests have broken out in Chile? And how significant is it also the role of indigenous people are playing in Chile? Because a lot of people don't even know about the existence of indigenous people in Chile, who are just generally seen to be white. Ann Peterman.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. There's obviously a lot of turmoil going on in Latin America right now, from Colombia to Venezuela to Bolivia. But what's going on here in Chile is a little bit different. This is the people rising up. This isn't the military rising up and causing issues. This is the people themselves saying, you know, ya basta, we've had enough. We can't take this neoliberal model anymore, that where the rich just keep getting richer and we just keep getting poorer, and the countryside is getting more and more ravaged by, you know, hydroelectric dams and industrial tree plantations and copper mines and lithium mines and all of these things. And and they're demanding a new constitution. So it's not a crushing move in the country. It's not a crushing feeling of despair, but a very uplifting and positive feeling that people really feel that the country is now moving forward toward democracy, toward a real transformation to a just future. And so people are excited here. And I think that's the main difference, is the tone and the direction that people are pushing for in this in these revolutionary times.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, the Mapuche have had a very big role here in Chile, in the uprising. And you've seen, for example, a couple of weeks ago, the Mapuche people tore down a lot of the colonial statues and, you know, put graffiti on other ones, because they just, you know, that this is part of the history that needs to change. This is part of the history that needs to be overturned and changed toward a new just future. And they've been incredibly inspired also by what the protesters are doing in the cities. So we visited two communities out in the country in the south of Chile that had taken over land 2 weeks ago, in tandem with these protests in the cities. Mapuche people are taking back their land, their traditional lands that were stolen from them under Pinochet and other leaders in Chile. And so, yeah, it's an amazing scene down here to see, you know, all of the progressive, really revolutionary spirit that's happening throughout the country.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Ann Peterman, just looking at the contrast where you see in Bolivia, where basically a coup took place and the indigenous president, Evo Morales, now in exile in Mexico. You see in Haiti ongoing protests, hundreds of thousands of people have been on the street for close to a year now, actually, and are also very well organized. What you described of the protesters in Chile, in Haiti, of course, fewer resources, but very, very skilled at setting putting up blockades. But the contrast with that's happening is that in Haiti, they're demanding the president step down. And I'm wondering if that's one of the demands in Chile. They're also demanding a new constitution, but also a total change, what they call overturning the cauldron, which reminds me of what you just said about a total change from these neoliberal policies. And I'm raising that to contrast, but both in Chile as well as in Haiti, those governments supported, of course, by the United States. You contrast protests that happened in Iraq and also in Malta recently, and both of the prime ministers, presidents of those countries have resigned in response to the protests, but that's certainly not happening. I saw a BBC interview with President Piñera, who is saying, well, he's not going anywhere. Ann Peterman.
Yeah, I mean, the main demand by the protesters here, and of course, there is a huge diversity of people involved in these protests. They're not all of one mind. But the main unified demand of the protesters is a new constitution. So it's okay. Been less about, you know, let's get rid of Piñera. It's been more about let's create our own future and replace this old, really repressive, politically repressive, environmentally repressive, economically repressive constitution that came about under the Pinochet dictatorship. But certainly people are filing lawsuits against Piñera because of all of the human rights violations. And there's actually a judge in Spain. Piñera was supposed to go to Spain because Chile is hosting the UN climate COP there. It was supposed to be here, but it moved to Spain. But Chile is still the president of the COP. And Chile's President Piñera was supposed to go there as part of the Chilean delegation. And a Spanish judge, the same one who went after Pinochet when he went to Europe, has said that if Piñera comes into Spain, he will have him arrested and detained. So Piñera is not going to be going to Spain. So, you know, this, it's amazing what's happening here. But people are demanding that Chile be forced out of the position of the presidency of the COP because of what's happening on the streets here.
Yeah, and Ann Peterman, on Thursday of last week, when in the United States some people were marking a day of mourning, the indigenous people and people who support them, it was Thanksgiving, and of course the first Thanksgiving was in celebration of a massacre of close to, you know, 700 indigenous men, women, and children. That's a hidden fact a lot of people don't know about. But on that day, I was really worrying about you and the team there, as well as what was happening with the indigenous community, Machupe Village. Tell us what was going on there that day, because they were under siege, it seemed, for a while from the police. You made some mention of it a bit earlier, but I'm wondering if you could just say a little bit about what went on there, because some people were also injured. Ann Peterman.
Sure, yeah. There are two Mapuche communities that have taken back their land. I made some reference to that earlier. A total of 1,500 hectares, which is not an enormous amount of land. This is, you know, compared to what the large landowners, the latifundos here in Chile, own. These are, you know, tiny specks of land that are largely abandoned by the landowners, not being used. And the Mapuches have said, these two communities have said, you know, we want our lands back. This is our ancestral territory from, you know, many, many generations ago, and we want it back, and there's no reason that we shouldn't have it back. The government is not going to help us, so we're just going to take it. And what they've done is, you know, blocked roads leading into this territory, and it's amazingly beautiful land. We went there the day before they were attacked by the Carabineros on Thanksgiving Day that you mentioned, and just to meet with the community, talk with them, hear what they were doing, and understand more. And they did some ceremony, and it was really beautiful. But the land itself is surrounded by these green hills and mountains, the Andes, and you can see volcanoes. There's three different volcanoes covered with snow that you can see on these mountains. I mean, it's just the most unbelievably beautiful place. And they explained that the mountains and the volcanoes actually ring their territory. That's the territorial boundary. So that was amazing to see that. And then the next day, after all of this, and they fed us cazuela and beautiful things, we went into the national park, the Canguillo National Park, just to be in the forest for a little while. And while we were up there, we suddenly get a frantic phone call, you know, from the village, from the community. The Carabineros have invaded and they're shooting people and there's people that are injured. Can you please come? So we immediately turned around and went down, although we were half an hour away, and we got close, and then the Carabineros had blocked the road and we had to go around. And anyway, we couldn't get in with the car, so we, two of us, walked in, and then the other two people kept looking and found a back way in through a road and a cattle path. And when we arrived, the Mapuche community had cut down a lot of poplar trees to blockade the roads and prevent the Carabineros from coming in, but they had already invaded one of the two communities, and the second community was keeping them out with these blockades. But, you know, everyone was tense and worried that they were going to come back any time, and because that's what the word was, that they were going to be coming back and evict the community from their land. So we stayed with them, you know, as long as we could, most of the day, to make sure that we would at least be there if the Carabineros came back. They did come back.
And the Carabineros, they're the police? The Carabineros?
The National Police.
Okay.
Those are the National Police. They're the ones that have this terrible reputation for violence in the protests. And anyway, they looked at over Oren's press credentials, and they wrote down everything, and then they went away, and they never came back. So I have a feeling that maybe they didn't want, you know, international attention for what they were doing. But they had already, you know, injured some people. There was one person in the hospital, and we interviewed one young man who had been hit with, I'm not sure if it was a rubber bullet or a tear gas canister in his forehead, and he gave us an interview that, you know, was so inspiring. He's like, I was at the hospital, I came back, and I'm here, and I'm not leaving, and you know, the Mapuche will resist. And that's really the spirit that we found in those communities, was just that, you know, we know that we will receive repression, but we don't care. This is our territory and we're not leaving.
Right. Ann Peterman, we are just going to pause for a moment and take a brief station break. So hold that thought and we'll come back to you for more of your report. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We're also available on Facebook. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, and our handle on Twitter and Instagram at So True Radio. We're also on SoundCloud across the nation and worldwide. And today we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in Atlanta. How about Atlanta, Georgia today? And internationally, we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in London, England. Let's do London, England today. And we are doing a special now here. Ann Peterman, the executive director of Global Justice Ecology Project, she is part of a team, Global Justice Ecology Project team, that includes Arne Langell, who is a credible activist as well as photographer. And if you go to the website of the Global Justice Ecology Project, you could see a number of photographs posted by Arin and video posted by the Global Justice Ecology team on the ground. And they are getting information up to us as quickly as possible. And our guest right now, Ann Peterman, Executive Director of Global Justice Ecology Project, on the ground. Right now, she is in Chile's capital of Santiago, also where an alternative conference or alternative events to the official UN conference, COP25, was due to take place in Chile. The president of Chile moved it, said it couldn't happen in Chile, so it's now happening in Spain. And there are various thoughts about Ann Peterman about why that happened. Some people are saying, well, it likely happened because if the conference was going on in the midst of all of these protests, it would bring more worldwide attention to the protests. And other people are saying, well, it just had to be moved because there was so much going on, they wouldn't have been able to carry out the conference in the way they would have liked. What are you hearing about that point?
Sure. Yeah, the conference was moved, I think, for a lot of reasons. But, you know, one of the main reasons, I think, is that Chile, you know, envisions itself as one of the jewels of Latin America and this great economic engine. And they did not want the world to see it in this conflict, in this chaos that has been caused by the protests, you know, protests almost nightly that are shutting down large parts of the city and causing major traffic jams. And there's a lot of the metro stations that are not usable anymore because of the protests. And, you know, Chile did not want that to be seen. They also didn't want to be exposed for all of their human rights abuses. So as you mentioned, you know, over 20 deaths, hundreds of people with eye injuries or have been blinded, all of the detention, torture, rape. I mean, you know, all of these accusations against the Chilean state and the national police. And Chile did not want that exposed to the world. So it was very kind of their former colonial power, Spain, to invite them to come over there at the last minute and still be allowed to have the presidency of the COP. And one of the things that we just learned about earlier today is that the COP, when it was going to be in Chile, was going to be funded, was being funded by the forestry industry here, which has caused, you know, huge damage across the countryside and displaced a lot of the native people. But they were going to be funding the climate COP, you know, so go figure. I guess it doesn't make, I guess it is pretty logical, actually, the way that these climate COPs go and the false solutions that they put out and the business as usual that they promote. But it still, it's always surprises me when I hear these things. So, yeah, that's why it moved to Madrid.
Yeah, and earlier we were also talking about the attack on the Machupe community, but I also wanted to draw out something that you just mentioned in terms of violence against women, because I read in an article somewhere that women who were being detained in these protests, and there have been a lot of people in Chile who have been detained, that there is sexual abuse that's going on against these women, including forcing them to undress, you know, in front of like everybody, right, at the detention center, including men. And I'm wondering how much of that is coming out in terms of how women are specifically targeted for that kind of treatment. Ann Peterman.
That is definitely known. It's very publicly known that this is happening, and women are trying to make it, and men are trying to make it even more known. And there have been several marches that have been marches against violence against women. There were some marches in Temuco. There was even a march in Pucón, which is this little tourist town outside of Temuco in the south part of Chile. So yeah, I mean, very much. And there's a series of days of action against violence against women and marches and all kinds of things going on. So people are trying to raise awareness about that and do something that will prevent those kinds of sexual assaults from happening again.
Right. And we see this happening, this issue of violence against women and women being targeted and rape being used as a weapon of war. You know, we've seen that happening in the Congo, but certainly in Argentina, in Poland and other places, and now in India. I saw a report just last night that said, well, the people are coming to the conclusion that India is not a safe place for women and children. But one has to wonder, because we know that this kind of violence against women, you know, happens on an individual level, and we know it also happens on the state, on a state level. And one also has to wonder what that has to do with the kind of social inequality in society as a whole, and the power in society of you know, is it men feeling powerless and therefore taking it out on somebody who has even less power than they do, who are the women and children? Because often people talk about violence against women, but they talk about it outside of the context of the imposed violence of poverty, repression, etc., and the impact that that might have, a causational impact of that, in terms of how women are treated. I wonder if you, I know you've traveled around a bit, I wonder if you have any thoughts on this. Ann Peterman.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. You know, that power, when you don't have power, that you want to take it out on other people. Here in Chile, however, there's also, it's also a cultural thing. You know, machismo is very big still in Chile. It hasn't, yeah, it really hasn't gone away like it has in some other places. And so I think that's a major part of it too, is that men just feel like they have the privilege to do this. These police officers, you know, that women are nothing. So that, you know, why not do this? Cause it's entertaining or whatever. And so I think that's part of it too. One of the pieces of graffiti that we saw in the women's march in Temuco was, machismo mata, or death to machismo. And so, yeah, it's a cultural thing here, I think, too.
Yeah, and I wonder how people are seeing these kinds of marches of violence against women, but also the land takeover that you mentioned in Machupe communities. Are people seeing that as part of the overall protests that are happening, or quite separate things? You know what I mean? Are people looking at it as part of the general uprising that's happening now on the ground in Chile?
They definitely are seeing this as one big mobilization, one big protest, where that's all interconnected. There are Mapuche flags all over the streets in Santiago. So, you know, the people are bringing the indigenous issues into the protests here in the city, even though the Mapuche communities are out in the country. And as I said, the mobilizations here are having this pro-woman, pro-feminist language to them. And it's really all of these issues brought together, and it's inspiring. It's inspiring. It reminds me of the anti-globalization movement in the U.S., you know, that we just passed the 20th anniversary of the Seattle shutdown on November
3rd. Battle of Seattle.
Where people came... Exactly, the Battle of Seattle, where people came together, you know, environmentalists and workers and women's rights activists and indigenous activists and so on, and, you know, all came together under the umbrella that we had to stop neoliberal globalization or economic globalization. And here, I think it's the exact same. It's people just understanding that the root causes of all of these different oppressions that we're facing are, you know, do lie at the feet of this neoliberal economic policy that has really wiped out a lot of the social and ecological areas in Chile. So it's great to see that people can come together unified in action around many different issues.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that seems to be a direction movements are taking, a kind of a fusion approach where it's not just one particular thing, but a number of things coming together. We see that in the United States. One way it's reflected is in the Poor People's Campaign, the National Call for Moral Revival, that considers itself a fusion movement, focusing on the pillars of evil, of they call evil, of of poverty, racism, environmental degradation, and the war economy, and you know, also wanting to shift the moral narrative. And it seems from what you are describing on the ground in Chile, but also when we look at what is happening in the protests happening in Iraq, as well as in Haiti, in Lebanon and other places, people, you know, there are a number of things. People are refusing to say, well, I'm out here for just this one thing, but I want a total change. Like it all has to change. And Peterman, it would be very useful for our audience also to get a sense of what is happening on the environmental front in Chile. And the you know, the alternative, the summit of the people that's happening now, because Chile is very dependent on what is called extractivism, right? Tell us about that. I mean, copper and other extract mining that's really been devastating the environment. What are some of the environmental concerns people are bringing now to this summit of the people? Ann Peterman.
Sure. And this directly connects back to the official UN climate summit going on in Madrid, which has all of these what they call natural climate solutions that are being promoted in the form of forest offsets and biodiversity offsets. And the reason they need these offsets is to enable business as usual. And Chile is a perfect example of what these green solutions actually mean on the ground. And that's one of the reasons why we're here, is to look at, document, and expose these actual impacts on the ground. So when, you know, the COP is talking about this green energy revolution, that we're going to have all of this fantastic green energy that is going to be clean and, you know, power the cities, and we'll have electric cars and blah, 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 all of this stuff. What that actually means is a massive, massive increase in mining for the metals that are required for those alternative energies. And here in Chile specifically, there are lithium mines up in the Atacama Desert region. There are copper mines in the Andes, you know, that are causing massive destruction. Then there's also hydroelectric dams that are being planned, all kinds of hydroelectric dams all over the country for this supposedly green energy. And this is something that's not getting enough attention at all, is the electrification of and the greening of the energy in the United States and in the global north is going to be causing huge devastation in the countries of the south where these minerals are based. And even in the depths of the oceans, in the deepest parts of the oceans, they're trying to figure out how to mine those areas with no idea what the environmental consequences will be from, you know, mining these untouched areas. And all of this is for, you know, solar panels, electric cars, wind turbines, all of the things that we've been told are perfect solutions to the environmental, to the climate crisis, but have huge environmental impacts.
Yeah, I mean, two things underscoring that point. Well, three things. One, we also know that in indigenous areas in the United States and across the world, where a lot of the, you know, what's needed for this alternative, you know, allegedly green solution to the crisis, that there's a lot of repression, et cetera, that happens as these multinational corporations, these big corporations, really want to hold on to that mining and want to exploit the people, but also want to pit people against each other, right, so that they could continue to do what they're doing. And meanwhile, in places like Southern California and across the U.S., we're happily going along with, oh, isn't it great? But realizing that, as you say, the wind power, the electric cars, et cetera, are all going to be dependent on this. I mean, even going out to the desert, the California desert, and passing like miles of these massive windmills. And I have to say, I saw something that really kind of shocked me because of the visual that I saw, that in Germany, they're developing these, you know, somebody has developed some cheaper way of creating these wind turbines with the idea of having these massive floating windmills, basically wind turbines, in the ocean. And then they had an image of it, and it freaked me out entirely, Anne, to just see the beautiful ocean with all these, you know, massive floating windmills on it. And I connected that with the fact that a whale was found. I can't remember what type of whale at the moment, just the last couple of days. And that whale had 220 pounds of waste. The whale was dead. I think it was a sperm whale. Had 220 pounds of waste, of garbage, of rope and plastic, etc., in its belly. 220 pounds. So I'm thinking that, well, this solution now, you're going to have these floating windmills on our oceans, right? And what's that going to do to, how Native people put it, to our relations, the life forms in the ocean, the whales and other life forms. So, and I just wondered your thoughts on that, because I'm sure some of that kind of discussion likely will be going on and happening at this alternative people's conference, people's summit on the environment in Santiago. Anne Peterman.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. And you know, the sky's the limit as far as the weird and dangerous ideas that are being come up with as so-called climate solutions. And one of the areas that's going to be addressed here at the Cumbre de los Pueblos is geoengineering. And also it's going to be addressed at in Madrid at the same time, because it's these geoengineering schemes are being promoted. Such as, you know, putting iron filings in the ocean to cause algal blooms and, you know, spraying sulfites in the atmosphere to reflect sunlight. And those are just, you know, two of dozens of proposals. Biochar, you know, let's burn an area of trees the size of India and put the charcoal in the soil to, you know, store the carbon. It just on and on, these crazy schemes. But it's hard to get on every single one of them, because they're coming at us so fast. And I think that's why what's happening in Chile and elsewhere, what we did at the convergence in Southern Illinois, was so important in talking about systemic change. Without systemic change, without rethinking how we're living on the world and how we're living with the planet, you know, and changing the economic systems that so that it's not based on constant growth and environmental destruction and, you know, resource extraction, the extractivism you were mentioning. Without doing that, without that transformation, you know, these crazy schemes are just going to keep coming, and there's not going to be any end in sight, you know, until the train eventually goes off the cliff, which is what we're very, very, you know, why we're very working very hard here to stop that. I mean, nobody wants the train to go off the cliff, but we have to stop business as usual and start looking at real alternatives and not these fake business as usual, let's make more profits alternatives.
Yeah, and I know certainly you have done a lot of work around the whole issue of genetically engineered trees. You know, they want to create these genetically engineered forests, genetically engineered salmon, you know, just things that are actually creating new bioorganisms. I mean, some stuff that hasn't existed before in nature, and nobody really knows the implications of it and the wider impact of it. So I think you've laid out a case in terms of systemic change, because, you know, I have heard people argue to say, well, yes, I do think there is an environmental crisis and something does have to change, but who disagree with the connection with basically saving the planet, where even the head of the UN is saying we may have reached a tipping point. And I just read also that the melting of the ice cap and the glaciers, et cetera, in the north, that waterfalls are being created now, which has to do with the rise in the in oceans, where islands like where I come from, Barbados, you know, is under threat. Islands in the Pacific also under threat. So what, you know, just tie that together. I'm looking at the clock. I can't believe how time is flying. We do have a few minutes left, but I know that for your network, it really has been important tying together this fight really for our planet and systemic change. Ann Peterman.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have to, the system has to change, the economic system, but also the way that, as I've mentioned, the way that we live on the planet. And there have been several studies, several UN studies and other studies that have shown that the areas that are most intact, the environmentally intact areas on the planet that are most pristine, are those inhabited by the people who depend on them, especially indigenous people. And it's true of the oceans too. The people, the oceans are the most pristine, where the people depend on them for their livelihoods and their lives. And, you know, that has got to be where we look for solutions. People say, oh, you know, we can't change the system, that's impossible. Well, the system has changed over and over again throughout history, you know, throughout human history. There have been many different incarnations of what was known as the system, and indigenous peoples have thousands of years of history of how to live on the planet. And I'm not saying that, you know, we will have to look at indigenous peoples to solve this problem for us. That's not what I'm saying, but I am saying that there are solutions that are being implemented now, that have been implemented through history, that we can look to start to figure out how to fix this problem. And that's where I have hope, is, you know, when we visited those Mapuche communities and saw them taking back their land and, you know, listened to their plans, their future visions for the land and goals for the land. And, you know, it was really wonderful to talk to them. And, you know, I really feel like there is a lot of hope, but we do have to act, and we do have to act in a way that makes sense, not these weird false solution nonsense schemes that come out of the UN and business.
Right. And there are also people who push back and say, well, you know, you talk about false solutions, but what are the alternatives right now? I mean, because right now we are in a situation where we're very dependent still on fossil fuels, even, and that some interim measures, and I think that's how some of these false solutions are being put forward, is like, well, we don't have anything else right now, so this is what we have to do. But what I hear you saying from communities that are dependent on the forests, or communities that are dependent on the oceans, that there are places that we could look to see how have people lived with the environment without destroying it, and what can we learn from them, although we know that those communities, you know, with the massive number of people living in these massive cities right now, et cetera. Do you know what I mean? That there are people, and I think there are some people who really would like to think about some other solutions that are not false solutions, but who really don't have a clue about where to begin or where to look. Ann Peterman.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the problem is that people suffer, and especially in the United States, people suffer from this idea of magical thinking, you know, that all these commercials that we watch throughout our existence have told us that, you know, our clothes will be magically cleaned and this will magically happen and that will magically happen. People now have this magical thinking about climate change, that if we just put up some solar panels and some wind turbines, everything will be fine and you know, we can go about our business. The change that we need to happen is going to be difficult. I mean, there's no question. It's going to be extremely difficult. It's going to be painful. But the question is, how can we do it in a way that is just, in a way that is environmentally sane for the future? And that can look at some of the examples that are happening. There are thousands, as Olivia Campesina, the Global Peasants Movement, says, there are thousands of solutions to climate change all over the world. We just have to look to them to see how to do it, and then figure out how to extrapolate it in our given bioregions. Not every solution is going to work in every bioregion. Not every solution is going to work in every city. Certainly not. But we have to start thinking outside the box. We have to stop thinking outside of this false solution scenario, you know, global capitalism scenario, that's only going to drive us all to extinction. And if we don't do that, then, you know, well, I think we know what the future is going to look like. So either we do it the hard way, which is knuckling down and figuring it out, or it's done the hard way for us. And I think that the latter would be a much worse alternative.
Right. And looking just in the last few minutes here, realizing that they are some, including the man who is now in the White House. Well, actually, he's now in the UK as we speak. Stirring up stuff there. Donald Trump, people who are climate change deniers, but who actually want the polar ice cap to melt, simply because it would mean that they would be able to have more access to the oil and gas and fossil fuels there that they can't now get to because of the ice. So they're seeing this as actually, this is a good thing, because on the one hand, they're denying climate change, but on the other hand, they're saying, well, if this stuff is melting, that's going to be good for economic growth. You know what I mean? So there's that on the one hand. And then you have grassroots efforts of like small farmers, family farmers, people who are talking about soil regeneration and how soil regeneration could be part of the solution also to global warming, at least that part of it. And just some final thoughts from you, and if you would also fill us in a little bit about what's going to be coming up at the Cumbre de los Pueblos, the Summit of the People. Ann Peterman.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's a lot still going on in Chile. The revolution is quite lively out there. And this week is going to be very interesting. That we have this Cumbre de los Pueblos going on, this People Summit. And it's Thursday and Friday are going to be a focus on tree plantations and the devastation that tree plantations have caused here in Chile, against the, especially on the Mapuche people, but on the environment and on the native forests as well. And so there's going to be a focus on that. And then Friday is the big global march starting at 5 o'clock. And that is going to be very interesting here in Santiago. Friday at 5 is when it gets very rowdy downtown in Santiago with the protesters. So I'm extremely curious to see how that's going to work out. And we'll be there, you know, prepared with our goggles and gas masks. But it's going to be a very interesting week here in Santiago. And then next week, the Cumbre is over, but the climate conference in Madrid is continuing, and we will continue to be here meeting with groups here and reporting on what's happening and trying as hard as we can to get the word out about what's going on in Chile to the folks in Madrid so that we can, you know, keep this dialogue going and keep the pressure on the Chilean presidency and on the COP itself to get out of this business as usual mindset.
Right. Well, we hope to continue hearing from you, and we'll carry as much as we can on it of what's happening on the ground there. Of course, we have the impeachment hearings that are happening, and we have various fundraising happening on the Pacifica stations. But we certainly will help to get the word out. And we hope to get another report from Chile, from the Global Justice Ecology Project crew that are there. We are out of time, so we are going to have to leave it there. Ann Peterman, thank you so very much for joining us. Oh, Ann, quickly give us the website where people could go to, they could see the photos and the videos, et cetera, that you all are posting.
Sure. It's globaljusticeecology.org. And on the front page menu, there's a tag that says Chile Climate News. And you click that and you can find out everything that we're doing in Chile.
On that note, we'll leave it there. Thank you so very much and stay safe. All the best. Okay, we are out of time. Today's show produced by me, that's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team. Engineering and assistant producing for us today, our assistant producer, Romero Funes. We'd like to thank Oren Landell and Peterman, the entire team on the ground in Chile with the Global Justice Ecology Project. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to Pacifica radioarchives.org. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.